everybody, to a new episode, a spring-loaded, super exciting extravaganza of a Be Better podcast episode today. And I'm not just saying that because we're in Devin's birthday week, which, Devin, well, you know, it's, first of all, happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
When you turn a certain age, you no longer just get a birthday, you get a birthday week. And so you are actually old enough to have a birthday week now. So congratulations on that.
I'm in the middle of my late 30s.
You are. You're in the, you know, the salad days are behind you, my friend. The salad days are behind you. But, you know, we are celebrating Devin's birthday all week. And right now he just put down an ice cream cone. And he's got a nice little cup of coffee in his hand. Middle of the day in a weekday. Like, you're just almost semi-retired right now.
For the listener, spring loaded is what we say when there are absolutely no topics planned for the podcast.
Oh, I got a couple things. I got a couple of real hot takes to be throwing out there.
Okay.
There's some new things that are coming out. Like, I mean, it is springtime. There's not a lot of racing going on. Although there was a big race down in Miami that just happened that gave us the last qualifiers for the U.S. Paralympic team.
So
my friends Howie Sanborn and Melissa Stockwell both punched their tickets.
Melissa's going.
Melissa's going now, PTS3, and Howie's WC1.
Okay.
So they're both going to Paris. That's going to be a lot of fun. They've been working really hard for that. There was a race down in Australia today, which is technically tomorrow, I think. Anyways, I saw that. That's on the WTC calendar. That was a big one. Now, you know, it's Olympics year, so it's so those have a different kind of like dynamic to them. But we are racing now. Big races here in the States haven't really kind of started taking off because, you know, it's still technically winter, even though it hasn't been winter at all in Minnesota this year, you know, which is pretty.
There was a couple weeks.
We had a time when the lakes did freeze over for a short period of time.
You got your pond hockey tournament in.
I did, but the next week following they didn't play because it was all like a sloppy mess. Yeah. And they were worried that all these drunk old men were going to fall through the ice on their little blades that they skate on. Didn't happen. So I'm glad I got mine in. I'm selfishly, you know, absorbed in that. So that was good. But we, like, the rink here at Pearl Park, the boards went up. I think they were up for maybe 2 weeks.
Let's call it.
And then they're like, screw it.
Yeah.
The city just took down the dirt that, you know, they pack around the boards. They took the dirt away yesterday. So everything's kind of going. I got guys in the hockey locker room. Those, you know, because we were supposed to pot at 1 today, and I told Devin's like, hey, I'm on my way. And I'm like, oh, crap, I'm still in the locker room trying to play a little pickup hockey this afternoon. But the guys in the locker room were talking about, you know, what's going on with cycling and being outside and, you know, trying to get some outdoor mountain biking in and what trails are open, what trails aren't. And it's surprising that more trails aren't open. Like Theo's not open, Leb's not open. I think Rush Creek has a small trail that's open.
Okay.
But with how dry it's been, you would think that more of those would be open sooner. Wouldn't you?
I have no idea. I don't know how to gauge dirt wetness on mountain bike trails. That's outside of my scope of practice, sir.
When's the last time you mountain biked?
Never. Not once. No, actually, that was a lie. When I worked in the bike industry, I had an opportunity to buy a heavily discounted mountain bike, which I did.
And?
Full mountain bike for $800. Great deal.
$800?
Yeah. Carbon hardtail.
Is this when you worked at Target?
This was a Focus Raven 29er hardtail. Got it for $800, rode it twice, realized there's no way I'm jumping over to mountain biking, and just sold it.
It's hard. I mean, when you're used to riding skinny tires on the road, it's scary as all get out.
Yep.
But it's good. It's a really good workout, though, because it really does kind of, it tests you. It makes you a better bike handler.
That it does.
Cornering, climbing. You can be a strong bike rider.
It's very high skill level to pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
The part of the fitness that I didn't relish was transporting yourself over to where you're going to mountain bike. Because that's a lot of dead time. That's the one thing I'll give road riding credit for is you go out the door and you go.
Yeah. I mean, that is definitely the advantage there. But there's nothing saying you can't get on your mountain bike and ride to a mountain bike park.
There's no law against it. It's not a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, you have no reason you can't, right? You just be riding on the road. Yeah, just going right there. Like, I've ridden my fat tire bike up to Theo, you know, and then rode maybe 2 miles in Theo and then rode my fat bike all the way back home.
Fantastic. What an experience.
It was so fun. It was glorious is what it was.
So no, I can't comment too much on the mountain bike trails.
No. Okay. So you can't do that. Well, let's dive deep into some things that are happening that just happened recently. And I'm not sure if even you knew this, but did you know that Ironman put some new rules out just recently?
Pray tell.
Pray tell. So remember the fad about stuffing water bottles in your jersey to make a fairing and to be all kind of super aero that way? Remember that fad that guys and gals were doing?
Is that... When did that fad take off? Is that just the last couple of years?
I think that was like 2 years ago when... what's his name? Did it when he won... He put a water bottle in his jersey and it looked like he had a fairing there, but they were storing water bottles, but it became like a fairing. Now, if you put a water bottle stuffed into the front of your race suit, full disqualification. Full disqualification.
So the punishment for, I don't know, hitting someone is the same as sliding a water bottle in your jersey.
It's cheating. Full disqualification. Also, if you fully unzip your top while riding, it's a 30 to 60 second penalty, depending on the race.
Let's talk through the logic of what's the danger to yourself or others of that jersey flapping in the breeze?
I don't know. I don't know what the danger is. I am literally just quoting my friend Ian, who posted these things. So I would say, what is the danger of it? The danger of it is, fully unzipping means that you have to zip it up at some point in time, too, which then you got to take both hands off the bars because you're not going to zip up a jersey with one hand.
Watching Mount...
right?
Mount Vernon? No, what's the big climb we always watch at Ironman Wisconsin?
Verona? Stagecoach.
Stagecoach.
Yeah.
Have I seen people, you know, sit up to try and take a jacket off or, you know, mess with apparel and crash? Mm-hmm. I sure have.
100%.
Okay, so I guess there's validity to that safety concern, but still, like...
I think that's probably the root of it, though. Because you're going to, at some point in time, have to put yourself in peril to put your jersey back on. Right?
Hmm.
So, there you go. There's another one. There are now new harsher littering penalties. 5 minutes or disqualification.
Littering, you can kind of, I can see more of an argument for the longevity at venues. You can't have people violating, littering willy-nilly.
But getting fully disqualified for littering specifically.
Well, and how do you handle the inadvertent, you know, things jettison off your bike? Your bottle shoots off your bike.
You're responsible for it.
It just...
Hey, you're responsible for it. How, you going to say that you're, like, not responsible for your bottle coming off your bike? Like, that should be an equipment issue that you think about earlier. You can't just go, well, I didn't know. I mean, have we seen plenty of them? Absolutely. The bottle mounts on the back end of a bike, people hitting railroad tracks or bumps, and they go, shkoong, shkoong, like you're hitting countermeasures. You're like the Red October shooting countermeasures out as the Dallas is chasing you.
All right, Christopher, you're a cop at heart.
At heart? You mean retired?
You're a cop, okay?
Wow, geez.
So here's where I'm going. In the Twin Cities, speed limit's what, 20 on almost any road?
What do you mean? 35W? It's 60 to 55. Why would you say it's 20? Are you driving 20 on 35W? You're that person driving 30 on...
In town, speed limit's 20. So no one obviously is going to drive 20. We're driving... Everyone is speeding at all times, which gives you... If you cared to, an excuse to come get us.
Yep. Wait.
So setting a super...
For me to come get you?
Yeah.
You're pointing a crooked finger at me.
Yeah. I'm putting a crooked finger at a crooked cop.
Oh, God.
So by setting the threshold super low, it's like, oh, okay, I could choose to enforce at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
These seem like very low thresholds where you're going to have a lot of violations that are completely unremarked upon, and then it'll feel like much more selective enforcement. Do you agree or disagree?
Well, I disagree. I think that they have to, it's, you know, to be perfectly, like, honest, it says it's 20 unless otherwise noted or displayed. So it's not carte blanche 20. And to quote the signs, 20 is plenty.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Unless you're, like, trying to get your kid to school. Or trying to get to hockey practice, or you're late to podcast with Chris,
literally no environment in which 20 is plenty.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think if you look at speed related deaths around the state and that are caused in, you know, from motor vehicle collisions, because they're not accidents.
Okay, we don't need to discuss that side of it. We're discussing the triathlon rule enforcement side of it.
Yeah, I think it, so. Did they make it bigger or did they make it looser? I'm not seeing where you're drawing the parallel on this one.
What I'm saying is you have all kinds of people who could get called for breaking the rules at any moment, right? Because the threshold is lower. You're more likely to be breaking some kind of rule.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the same number of refs out there.
Yeah.
And they're dealing suddenly with not only are the drafting enforced, there's all the other things they have to enforce anyways. And suddenly there's these new things like they're checking zipper status.
Oh, yeah.
So it's
one more thing.
I'm asking about enforcement and the selectivity. Like we've seen sometimes it feels very selective, like, oh, so-and-so got deked for crossing the yellow line and so-and-so didn't.
So you would have to go back to the greater question, which would be, what is the purpose of rules in sport? Is it to create an even playing field?
Mm-hmm. Is it?
Is it to create an even and fair playing field? That's why you can't. That's why you can't horse collar somebody in football. That's why you can't trip a person in hockey. You know. That's why you can't draft in cycling, or in triathlon, right? So we've stumbled
into a very philosophical vein.
I know,
here.
But if we start there, do we agree that in principle, rules are created to create a safe and even playing field for athletes?
Yes, but beyond that, you know, for Ironman, it's less about the athletic performance and more about managing 2,000 people's behavior.
Is it though? I think it's not about managing 2,000 people. I think the rules would be the rules no matter how many people were racing. I don't think it's extrapolated. I don't think there's an extrapolation where it's like, okay, we're going to bring this rule in if there's 2,000 people. If there's 50 people, I think the rules would still be the same.
Well, the zipper thing has nothing to do with fairness and everything to do with safety. So they're WTC is trying to save a bunch of lawsuits and
Or are they just trying to be safe to try and to create if they've seen an issue that creates safety hazards and let's say how do we correct that? We have to create a rule to make a safe playing field for athletes because athletes are going to do stupid stuff that they don't know they don't think is unsafe. They'll put discs on the front of their bike and not realize that's a terrible thing. They'll ride inverted. They'll like do all kinds of dumb things. They have those super duper wide helmets that now that they're using
the mega helmets,
the Darth helmet from.
They really are. They're comical.
So I would say that the rules are made to make the playing field safer and more even. So the bottle in the chest is that to be safe? No, I would say the bottle in the chest is to make it even. Because if they're seeing that putting a bottle in your chest has an aerodynamic advantage, then they would make a rule to say we're going to limit that. Or we're going to say that equipment modification is not legal. Now, you could argue that other governing bodies make super silly rules, like the length of your socks in pro cycling.
Yep.
You know, those are super silly rules, or the length of your gloves in pro cycling. But I think ultimately what is the idea or the principle at heart is to make it even and equal for everybody. So with the rules that we see, the littering rules, I would say probably they're starting to see littering that's happening on the course, which then may jeopardize the race.
Yep. Well, so, yeah, if you litter willy-nilly, the local population is going to want that event gone.
Yeah. So are you responsible if your bike jettisons a bottle? Yes, you are.
Yep.
And if you don't go back and get it, are you a fool? I would say yes. How many races, a lot of pro racers have chosen to not go back and get jettison fuel? Because then, like, pros would probably have more significant bottles on them, especially if they're taking pure liquid
A really tightly calibrated nutrition plan.
And if they skip that just for time, you know it's going to come back to haunt them. You never heard anybody go, yeah, I really am glad I never went back and got my bottle.
No one's ever said that extra 300 calories.
No one's ever said that. Hmm. So I would say that could be more for, you know, keeping the races in check, especially with people not giving two craps.
So what you're saying now is for the safety of the, you know, safety on the course and also keeping the race alive. That has nothing to do with fairness. We're talking about governing 2,000 people. You agree with me. You just came around and agreed with my point.
Okay, don't put me... I'm going to step outside of that box. I'm not going to be put inside that box.
Do we know any of their motivation behind
it? I think you could say that safety comes from littering as well. Bottles all over the place are going to cause crashes. Gels getting stuck to the road are going to, you know, who knows what's going to happen. There's going to be raccoons.
I'm just saying they tailor it for Ironman because it is both a pro race at the front end, but that's a very small part of the day,
mm-hmm.
and they're governing 2,000 other people. It's different than like the rule set at the Tour, where at the Tour, yeah, you can throw a bottle off to the fans, and it's an important piece of the spectacle.
Yes, that's 100% allowable.
Yeah,
but even in the Tour, there are rules for, you know, for the like. You can't take hydration or nutrition in the last, 5K or 10K of the race?
Yeah.
You know, so why is that? Keep the cars out of there, because that's when the race starts to come together. You know, you can't take a bottle and, you know,
it's too unsafe.
Yeah, it's too unsafe. So rules being made to keep the players safe or to keep a safe playing field.
The UCI does set very whimsical and arbitrary rules. Like, because, you know, in cycling, everyone's looking for advantage. Everyone's evolving the equipment and the practices.
Yep.
And so someone makes a push forward and they find gain from it. And then the UCI might snap back like, wait a minute.
We're going to make a rule on this.
Those socks are unsafely tall.
Well, you could say, like, and not just socks, but let's talk about, like, bike weight, right? Bikes have to be 16 pounds. I think 16 pounds is the
there's some minimum standard. Yep.
Yep. The bikes have to weigh. Now that's meant so that people don't create unsafe bikes.
Yep.
Now there's a way to make a rule, and then there's a way to enforce it. So if you've seen how some teams, when their bikes are, they weigh less because, you know, they're cutting grams all over the place. And how do they make that up? Well, they tape like 4 pennies underneath the saddle, or they used to drop quarters into the seat tube,
yep.
or whatever, like, or sand. You know, whatever it might be, those are like, does that make the bike more safe? No, it's still unsafe. So are there ways that they should govern, or at least if a rule is made to make the field of play safer, is it up to the organization to enforce it in the way that it was, in the spirit of the law or the spirit of the rule? Or the letter of the rule. Because the letter of the rule says, as long as the bike weighs 16 pounds, if we're using 16 pounds as a number, as long as the bike weighs 16 pounds, it's fine. Now, the spirit of the rule says no, because it makes it unsafe and it shouldn't be. So you would have to look at it different. So
you could be the team that drills holes in the carbon frame to cut weight and then, yeah, like you said, tapes a couple pennies under the bottom bracket.
Yeah. Nope. Or puts magnets in your, in your wheels or motors in the bottom bracket.
Hey, there are no motors in pro cycling.
I don't know, I'm just saying. Rumor has it.
You know what has been fascinating, Christopher? I've been rewatching the extended highlights of the Tour de France from 21, 22, 23 while I'm riding inside these days.
Mm-hmm.
Jumbo-Visma obviously has been one of the dominant team players.
Yes. They're the new Postal, right?
They're the new Postal right now.
Yeah.
They're sponsored by Cervelo. Cervelo has a aero race bike for them and a climbing race bike for them. You would be surprised the number of days their riders are choosing that aero bike, the S5 over the R5.
Oh,
even days in the mountain, some of the mountain days, some of the, you know, mixed heavy climbing days, they seem very biased towards the S5, the heavier, more aerodynamic frame, over the lighter R5.
Over the climbing bike.
Yeah. Thoughts? Huh.
You know, it might be, I'm going to start with, not all athletes are the smartest tools in the box. And at many times,
can confirm.
And many times it's about superstition and comfort. So you may not have the lightest bike in the world, but if it's the bike that you ride all the time and you feel very comfortable and dialed with, you may hesitate to move away from something. Unless it's where you've seen in like time trials where they're on a full TT bike and then mm-hmm. they come to a big climb and they get out and they switch to a traditional road style bike. I would say that the differences might be subtle for them at best, and the weight probably could be mitigated through other things, but it does bring fascination to how somebody chooses what they're doing. And I would say for me, I would normally choose aerodynamics over weight 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
Only because once you get up to rolling speed, weight becomes less of an issue. When you're going uphill, I get it. But, you know, they're all within a minuscule amount of each other.
The margin is pretty close.
And so what they want is they want the aerodynamics for when they go on a break.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to try and hunt a breakdown or you're going to try and bridge a gap, you're going to need aerodynamics at that point and not weight. That's all aerodynamics. Weight is not going to get you from point A to point B or from the gruppetto up to the first chase group, right? That's where aerodynamics are going to have to be in play hard. And if you think across the board for everything else, aerodynamics is really like the gold standard.
Yeah.
Like we're talking, and that's socks, jersey, hat, those goofy, stupid, like ginormo helmets now.
The aero helmet evolution has been wild.
We have seen some very oddball things in our time.
Just wild.
If you think back to like the days when like they were actually fairings, like when Lance had the helmet, mm-hmm. like the head fairings, where basically it had no protective status. It did not give you any protection at all.
But
if you were to fall
in his era, we were bridging out of times when you could still race with no helmet on.
Oh sure, yeah, they would like race with just a hat. They would climb without a hat. They would just climb with a hat. Or guys would just race with hats, like Pontani and those guys.
The tour guys choosing aero over weight. I mean, I think it validates your point. I think aero probably is king in all but the most extreme of vertical circumstances.
You would have to say there's the only days you're probably going to see them is if you have like real big HK climbs that are on very specific days. And I would say only the guys that are going for the polka dot jersey would probably make those choices.
Yep.
Your green jersey, your general class, your GC guys, those guys are all going to go for aero because they're going to be, and actually if you're descending, because you got to go down the other side, weight's actually going to be on your favor.
Yep. It's very funny to me because the industry wanted to try and sell everyone two bikes starting in 2012-ish. They first rolled out these aero road bikes.
Yep.
Then they evolved them. They got much better and much better and much better. So Trek had the Madone and the Amanda. The Aero and Climbing Specialized had the Venge and the Tarmac. Cervelo has the R5, S5. So a lot of the big brands had, you know, two top-tier racing bikes for you to buy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the brands have consolidated. They just merged them.
Well,
so they took some of the aero tubing and cut some weight, and the new Tarmac is just a slightly more aeroified old Tarmac, and they're trying to do that with the Amanda, whereas Cervelo has maintained two independent options for their top tier athletes.
And it's interesting as to why that would happen. I mean, the question would be, why have they gone away from it? I would say you're probably not seeing anybody buying two $10,000 bikes.
Dentists make a lot, but they can only buy so many S-Works.
Well, you could also make a case for realtors.
Hey, let's not.
Or real estate agents. Is there a difference?
There is a difference.
I don't. You have to explain that at some point in time, the difference between two. But
here's the very funniest thing about the term realtor. That is owned by the National Association of Realtors, NAR, which is at the center of a boatload of national lawsuits right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I pay a boatload of cash every year to have my local membership and then my national membership. So they fleece me. They reach in my pocket for membership dues all the time.
To become a realtor?
To have that special realtor status versus
is it realtor or realtor?
Realtor.
Is it like the same as sauna and sauna?
Sauna.
Sauna?
Realtor.
So I would say, getting back, nobody's going to buy two bikes. Nobody's really, your average person's not buying two bikes. The other thing is you have to, if you have two bike lines, now you have to sustain that amount of production and that amount of
well, R&D for two models every 3-4 years. You got to roll out a new model.
You have to. I just don't think there's a market for it. So they're trying to get the best of both worlds.
And I can see like a Specialized for business reasons, like, let's just consolidate them.
Yeah.
Whereas it's just interesting. Cervelo has not, and maybe Cervelo is a larger proportion of their clientele is the high end.
Well, and sometimes they, if they're getting from their teams, because that's usually kind of what drives a lot of innovation. If they're getting from their teams, we want both of these, even though they're not showing it, that we really need both of these, they're going to keep them on.
Yeah.
I mean, they made their bread and butter on, like, Cervelo was like that, like, you know, if you think the P3 and mm-hmm. when they started coming out with the, I think the R3 was they called it Squoval, where it was square oval. And they had like the pencil thin chain stays and seat stays. And, you know, there were those guys like, Vroomen and White.
Yep.
Yeah, those two guys were like, they were huge innovators. I mean, they're not at all involved in the program at all anymore. They've sold out that part of the company. But
the tradition of innovation has continued. Almost, you would argue more so with Cervelo, a performance oriented innovation.
Yeah. I think that's kind of a reputation, and you have to keep with it. You know, it's like, what does Trek always have? What are they trying to pursue, and how are they trying to portray themselves inside the market? You have to define yourself, much like in a car. You know, how does an Audi define itself from a Saab? I don't know the answer to that.
Didn't Saab shut down their automobile part?
I don't know. I don't know the difference between those two, but you know, they have to be able to differentiate themselves inside the market. So I think that would probably be it, and that would probably be a big part of it.
How brutal is it, Christopher, if you're one of these bike brands that's shelling out how many millions to sponsor a world tour team,
mm-hmm.
you know, in all the equipment and the cap related costs, and they're not producing for you?
Oh, yeah.
Because you think of Cervelo, like, okay, they're at the top. They're dominating. Last year, Cervelo has won all three of the Grand Tours, any number of other events. So Cervelo, and, you know, they have both genders, they have some key players across road and cross.
Yep.
Specialized, how many teams are in the Pro Peloton on a Specialized right now? It's at least two, maybe three. And how many wins are they getting for it?
Not a lot.
It's a tough, it just is a tougher showing. It's like...
Well, they did have a lot of their money in and a few people. You know, I think Peter Sagan was a huge kind of like that was their, you know, their key point.
For several years, yeah.
He was the guy. And before Sagan, it was I think Cavendish Road Specialized. I think he was part of that program. You know, also Specialized, I think, probably markets to more of a domestic citizen more than to the high end racer, where Cervelo does not have a lot of offerings that aren't like high end racer people. You know, you can go out and I can go to an Eric's bike shop and for less than $1,000, for $750, I can get a Specialized road bike. I can get a Trek for that matter as well. So I think, you know, for them, I don't know that they see the value in that, because that's not where they're identifying their, you know, their brand.
Then why do they have two or three pro tour teams?
Because they can.
It may not be
like, are you sad that you're not winning? More are you, you know, are you getting more out of the exposure? So we don't need to see that. We don't need to have people see them winning. It's not about the winning. It's about the exposure. We have like three teams riding them, so everybody likes to ride them. And so there's more people riding that versus less people riding a Cervelo. Or it, like you see a Focus or a Ventum.
We both know there's the huge pop if you've got the guy on your bike.
Oh, yeah.
Lance rode Trek to national and international prominence.
Trek basically, he was the workhorse. Mm-hmm. He was what made Trek, Trek.
And look at their team now is like... Yeah, obviously, I'm not, you know, the team is obviously very skilled athletes, but they're not producing consistent giant wins.
No.
They're not the top player.
Well, they're not associated with a big main sponsor anymore, you know, because Trek was the bike underneath Postal, and then they were the bike underneath, who are they? There was a, where did they, who was, where do they go after that when they were like the popsicle colors, when they were like blue and white and.
Were they ever Astana?
No, they weren't Astana.
Okay.
Like when they had, like Jens rode for them, and Horner rode for him when Lance like had kind of stepped away. They were Trek Sigafredo.
Yes.
They were something in there. I just don't think that they have ever, like, you know, they have not gone out. And I mean, bikes are normally not the main title sponsor. You know, they don't have that kind of cash. I don't think they have the...
Because it's 10 or 20 to be the title sponsor, one of those teams, right?
You know, even if you go even back farther, like Bianchi. Was Bianchi ever a main national sponsor? I think they actually were, as I said. I think if you look at the jerseys up on the side here, on the poster next to you, I think Bianchi was, they were a big sponsor at one point in time. And actually, if you go in the second row down, second from the left, that's the Trek one I think I was talking about. I can't, the black and white one there.
Yep, the Schleck era.
Yeah, the Schlecks.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think it's, you know, when you look at a sponsor, you have to look at what are they trying to get out of it?
Yeah.
You know, exposure. Like, what is Quick Step? What is an Italian flooring company trying to get out of a main title sponsorship? You know, what is Lotto trying to get out of? That's a national lottery. You
BMC
know?
Rolled. BMC had their own team for a time there.
BMC did have a team for those.
Don't they have incredibly deep pockets behind them?
Well, they're the Swiss. They've stolen money from people across the ages, so... You know, there is all that. Right. There is all that stuff. Yeah, and we're not going to go into World War II history.
Okay, let's talk about bike choices, because we talked about it before with Nice being the world championship.
Yep.
What do you think the breakdown is going to be between people who opt for a road bike for easier descending versus maybe what you said, triathletes predominantly train on their tri bike, so maybe they feel, even though they have a road bike or they might descend a little better on their road bike, they maybe feel more comfort.
I think this is where the aero road bike comes in. I mean, if you think about, like, I remember in the early 2000s when Andy Potts, I believe, was the first person to take a tri bike frame and put a road bike handlebars on it to race Escape from Alcatraz. And he had incredible success doing such because, you know, big climbs at Alcatraz, you got five major climbs that you have to do that are big climbs. And when I'm talking big climbs, I'm saying over 10% gradient for a substantial amount of time. And that's a short bicycle course, 17 miles, I think, 17.1.
Yep.
And that's a lot of climbing. So the aerodynamics of climbing is definitely there. We actually tried to incorporate that. If you remember, in your early days at MJETS, you rode a QR Lucero tri-frame where I put road bike handles on there.
Yep.
You remember that?
I
certainly do. So I'm not saying that
unforgettable experience.
I know. I'm not saying that I'm an innovator in this field, but I do believe that in going into Nice, I believe that it would be advantageous to most athletes to ride a aerodynamic road bike for handling and for comfort and descending purposes. Knowing how many turns they have to have, knowing like how tight the roads are, knowing what the road conditions could be, and how much descending there is and how tight it is, you definitely need to have a road bike. I would want to. I've tried to talk athletes into road bikes even when they were doing like Whistler and Mount Tremblant, and actually Placid for that matter. I've tried to talk athletes into that. Now there are.
I would argue Wisconsin is a strong candidate because more than some of those you've mentioned. Some of those you've mentioned are more sustained climbs and more straight roads.
100%.
Wisconsin is very twisty, turny, punchy.
I always said if I ever was dumb enough to do another Ironman and it happened to be Wisconsin, I would do it.
Hey, and you might still be.
I might still be. I'm not the smartest deck in the, you know, card in the deck. I would do it on a road bike, mainly because for the same reasons. I mean, how many times have you ridden the Wisconsin course?
Couple dozen.
Yeah, I've ridden it like at least 25, 26 times and for different various reasons. And every time I've ridden it on a road bike, I have said to myself, this is the bike you should be doing it on. Yep. Again, because you can descend so much faster and you can be as aerodynamic as you need to be by just putting your hands on the top bar. You can be aerodynamic. And I think that you just, if you're a good rider, you can maximize that piece. Not putting clip-ons on per se, but at least just having to maximize it. Now, I think if you're a pro, you don't make that choice because you're not a... I don't think you can. I think you're handicapping yourself, and you need to have the advantages of the aerodynamics for the parts of the course that are flatter.
And you're spending more time above 20. You're spending so much more time at 25 or above.
Yep.
Versus the average rider on that course is doing
yeah,
the bulk of their riding at 15 to 20 miles an hour.
Yeah. If you're down below 14 miles an hour, sit up.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a quote that Kevin O'Connor had once told me, and that we came from, we did wind tunnel testing. It's like, if you're going up, and this, I remember this is from Timberman, which is, you know, not a climby course, but it's a rolly course, and there's some sustained uphill sections. But if you start to find yourself in a normal day going below 14 miles an hour, that's the point in time when you want to get out of aero and you can stand up. Anything above 14, stay in aero.
Yeah.
So if you're grinding at like 15 and a half, stay in aero, because that's going to have it. The advantages are going to actually be, you know, I would say quite substantial versus if you're going 12 miles an hour and trying to stay aero. And you've seen those people just kind of chugging along, like, don't do it, because you lose. Number one, you got zero power.
Yep.
You don't have any control. The wind gust's going to blow you right over. Bears are going to come out of the woods and like just pounce on you.
Bear attacks.
Bears. There's bears. Bears can smell the gel.
Well, we train them all year long. They get the extra gels from people riding on the course.
100%.
And on race day, that's why every Ironman, they don't publish it.
That's why you have now disqualifications for littering. Mm. Bears. Mm-hmm. And raccoons.
It's all coming together.
And maybe geese.
I've heard they've covered up 3 to 4 bear attacks per year.
It's a big cover-up, actually. TMZ is now starting to report on it.
Are we blowing the lid off a big scandal?
We are. You know, we're going to go, this is going to be the next episode of The Daily, you know, from the New York Times. At some point in time, they're going to go, scandals in triathlon, bear attacks on Ironman courses.
Are you actually prominent enough in triathlon for us to say that on a podcast and you potentially get sued?
100%.
Cool.
Because you know what? It's my luck. My luck that some random dude
you're gonna
who's
get
a lawyer
letter.
Is going to go, wait a second, libel. That's what that is.
You're going to get that cease and desist in the mail.
I am. They're gonna take away all revenue that we get from
all
this
the
podcast.
Be better podcast revenue.
You're like, I wow. want the fuzzy covers that are on your microphones, and I want all the mic cord. That's what they're gonna do, or they're gonna come take soda away from you.
Oh man, soda is sitting peacefully next to me as is customary.
I know, she's like sleeping. She did try and take your ice cream cone earlier.
She sure did. So for the listener, I stopped at Heather's, which is very close to Christopher's HQ here. Mm-hmm. It's very delicious. Heather's Minneapolis. They have in-house soft serve, which is a real rarity these days. It's yummy. I have an oat milk latte, and I had a little twist cone in the middle of the day.
And ironically, I ate. Jill went, my wife, while I was playing hockey. She asked me if I wanted Heather's for lunch, and I had the salmon BLT, which is like a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich. Mm-hmm. It's like a huge slab of grilled salmon. Like, I mean, we're talking a huge filet of
you're living
salmon.
Pretty good. Speaking of bears.
Oh, it was so good. And then tater tots.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, I didn't get the sides. I would have gotten the greens on the side, but Jill had said
I would have.
I would have, but.
But the tater tots were there.
But, they're just in the box. I can't turn them away. So, yeah, Heather's. They're very, very good.
So don't cast judgment on me for having an ice cream cone on my birthday week.
I didn't cast judgment.
I'm 37 years old.
I was feigning maybe. I was a little jealous.
I rode Zwift before this, so I needed that sustenance to power me through this performance on the podcast.
Ah. So you're not riding pure Zwift now. You've been outside a couple times, haven't you?
Rode outside a few times already this week. Zwift was the better choice for today, so just did Zwift.
Just because it's a little windy, a little gravelly, a little cold. Got the kids at home. What is it?
A little cold. Needed to get started to finish in time to be over here. Didn't want to deal with suiting up for an outdoor ride at like 48 degrees.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting for the first one. I could have, but it's been trying to be a little bit busy. Have you ridden any of the climb portals?
I have. I rode one today.
Which one did you ride?
Cold Aspen or something. It was the one day of today. It was. It took me 55-ish minutes.
Do you like them?
Yes. It's been interesting. I've done two or three of them now. It's just a different demand because you, with the variations in grade, I'm getting more attuned to it. So I shift more proactively to keep the power a little more stable throughout instead of just dropping from like 250 to 300 while I'm climbing harder to 150.
Yeah.
So I try to be more proactive to keep it a little more stable, but I still recover a little bit throughout. So it's almost like a little interval session where I go a little bit harder on the orange stretches.
Yep.
That's where I hit a great rhythm. Red is less good. Yellow and blue are a little too shallow.
Yeah. For those of us that have not, or those who are listening that have not done the climb portals, climb portal is essentially you go through like this little wormhole and you are actually going up a simulated climb that is actually a real climb somewhere in the world. I think the Tourmalet is this weekend or next weekend. Ooh. The Tourmalet, the Col de Madone is this weekend.
Okay.
It's like Friday. It might be today and tomorrow and Sunday. And then the Tourmalet is next because I've been assigning these to athletes. So I like them. But the color changes in the gradient of the road. So that's and it looks like you're at a discotheque. And then what do you think about riding against like some of this Euro trash that has like,
hey,
you
whoa.
Know, for them, it's like, you know, the evening time, but you, it's like middle of the day or in the morning.
I am not engaged enough with the app to actually be clued into other people very often. So I don't.
You don't know care. Who's around you?
Nope. Don't care.
Not at all.
Nope.
Do you, when you get to the top, do you turn around and bomb the bottom?
Sure do. I treat that as my cool down.
Nice. I think it's that is very fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the climb portals, I do think they're a real nice, a nice piece.
Now, what's interesting about them is the one I did today was maybe 2,800 feet of climbing.
Mm-hmm.
Took 55 minutes. And here I am, while I'm doing this, I'm watching tour coverage.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, these are the, oh no. You realize the magnitude of the difference between, and I'm not in peak form. I'm not riding it at a peak effort, of course, but still the magnitude of difference between citizen level climbing that kind of a climb. It's,
oh yeah.
I mean, they do it in almost half the, you know, it's like so much faster.
It's unbelievable how fast they ride. And then if you think about it, that's when they're hitting them late in the race. You know, they've ridden for.
Yeah, they've already done two or three other climbs.
Yeah, other, many, many, many miles. And also, there's what's not factoring into you is maybe the altitude with the density of oxygen in the air.
Both altitude and heat.
Mm-hmm.
I had a good friend go over and he was spectating.
Well, you could be heat though, but you're not getting the wind that they're getting. So the evaporation.
I'm sitting in a.
You don't have a team car coming up and handing you bottles. You might have, is Svea just kind of handing you bottles on the side, giving you sticky bottles.
It's humbling to factor in. Like, okay, I did a simulated version of what they do. They do it on a 90-degree day in July.
Over and over and over.
Yeah, and they're at 90 miles in, and they do it 20 or 30 minutes faster.
It's crazy if you've been to Europe before.
Yes, but the only time I've ridden over there, I was in Denmark, so I didn't really get the climbing experience.
Yeah. So I have been to the Tour de France and the Giro, and I've ridden, you know, sections or segments of both of those, and I can tell you that they are unbelievably hard. It is unbelievably difficult. The Col de Abisque, I rode that one when I was in shape,
mm-hmm.
when Jill and I were dating. That's an age.
When you were keeping it a little tighter, when you were still trying to quarter.
When I didn't care about having another extra tater tot with dinner. That was before I had to try and, you know, win her favor. That's an HK climb. That was unbelievably hard. Yeah. Unbelievably hard. And that was on my cross bike, too. That was back when Black Betty was my first road bike. Back in the day.
Black Betty. Do you still have Black Betty?
Black Betty still hangs up in the Garage Mahal. Haven't, you know, I think that I broke her out for a cross race a couple years back.
Nice.
Upgraded the tires. Remember that I got David Thompson tires on there now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. What? Ooh, new what? David Thompson.
Hold on. What does a David Thompson tire mean?
I bought them from him. And I bought them for like $75. And he's like, I thought we agreed like 150. I said, I think you said 75. He's like, oh, okay.
The poor man, he's living off triathlon, and you scammed him.
I wasn't scamming him. I legitimately thought it's what we agreed to. So I paid him. I paid the man.
This badge says it was 75.
That's what I said. You want to argue? No. So I got some David Thompson info.
Okay, go on.
Rumor has it DKT is a Green Beret working for the military now.
Are we allowed to say that?
I think so.
Okay.
And I
hope so.
Working on the space program out in Colorado. And I don't know if it's Space Force, but he is.
David made Space Force?
Yeah, he is legitimately a Green Beret and training. He's not going to go to space, but training people to be ready to go to space and combat. Yeah, I know. You're like, what? So
space
I got
guy.
That from a pretty reliable source who from a person who babysits his dog.
Okay.
So I feel like that's good information. But I was like, wow. First of all, it's his second like branch of the military that he's gone to because he was a Navy guy.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's Army. And okay. Green Beret. Can you imagine David with a gun? Like just, you know, humping around like doing that kind of stuff.
45-year-old dad.
You know, I can see like Brock Lesnar as a Green Beret, a young Jesse Ventura as like a Green Beret, but no, I can't see DKT.
Mm. A Space Force Green Beret.
He's a, yeah.
Well, okay.
So I'm not even sure like how that relates to anything, but it's, you know, David being like the, you know, you could probably say he's the best triathlete that ever came out of Minnesota?
Looking at the body of work, you'd have to say he's the only guy who made a run of actually making a living as a pro, so you have to give him points for that.
Do you think Ted right now is crying?
Ted has a regular W-2 job that funds his lifestyle.
Hey, David did too. He worked at a bike shop. He has a doctorate in nuclear engineering. Ted right now goes, so did I.
God, we have to stop bullying Ted.
We have to definitely stop bullying Ted.
We have to stop saying slanderous things about a company that could sue you in WTC.
Yep, for sure.
Sue you and definitely not me. MSP Moves renounces any commentary you made about bear attacks. We have to stop disclosing important military secrets about David Thompson and the Green Berets and the Space Force. And you absolutely have to stop picking on poor Crybaby Ted.
Crybaby Ted, that's
you
like,
called him that. No, your you words.
No, that just came out of your mouth. I did not say anything of the sort.
He works a very...
I just said I wondered if Ted was sad that we weren't considering him in the pantheon of you know, greatest triathletes to ever come out of the state of Minnesota.
He's not even in the running for Space Force.
Wow, okay, for Space Force. So if Ted became a Green Beret, would he qualify
then
more?
Then you'd have to put him in the...
You'd have to at least put him in the consideration.
Because in the pantheon, David, he had from what, 03-04 till 16-17-ish, he was kind of the guy in the States. So on the men's side, he was the top player.
Yeah, he was unbeatable.
He made a real run. He won actual professional races, yep. Consistently podium. There was a stretch at his very peak in about 07 where he could have been a contender at international mm-hmm. world championship level events.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say on that merit, yeah, you'd have to look at the women's side. You look at some of the talent we've had in the last decade with Heather, Ruth, Kathy, some of the biggest names. Does their talent match David?
Yeah.
Or even perhaps exceed? I would say probably.
I would say, yeah. And I think there's more higher caliber female talent that's come out of Minnesota than male talent.
Yeah.
And that's I would stand up to that. I would stand there. And I again, you know, if you just said Kathy and Ruth, I would say just right there. Those are just the two of them.
Oh, are we just going to exclude multi-time national champ Heather?
Well, maybe.
How many times does she have to win the national championships before we say she's pretty legit too?
I'll put her up there too. But you know, I just think that even when you look at how long their careers have gone.
Yeah.
And just even now, I mean, Kathy could enter a race now and I'd still bank on her to win.
Oh yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And Ruth the same way. Yeah. I'd put Ruth, I would love to see the two of them go head to head.
I think Heather is actually making a comeback right now too.
Is she really?
I think she was off for a few years. I'm not certain why, whether it was like run injuries, because she comes from such a deep swim background.
Okay.
Is it biased to assume swimmers have weak injury prone running legs? Is that mean to say?
I don't know. They normally have more brittle hair.
That's true. That's also true.
You know, I mean, that's if you think about it.
But I guess runners who come to triathlon usually come to triathlon because they got too injured in running, so they probably have injured running legs too.
100%.
Who has the least injured running legs in triathlon?
Me.
You. No. How's your back?
How's the back? Back's actually been very healthy.
Oh.
You know what? I think I am giving. I'm going to give it three things.
Okay.
One.
Steroids.
And then I wish. I went to two pillows. So I double up my pillows at night. So I sleep kind of at an angle.
Okay.
Which I remember my grandparents used to sleep on like a big wedge of foam. So I'm not sure if there's some merit into that. But I sleep on my back with two pillows.
Okay.
I find that my back is much, much more stable in the morning. Two, taking a regular sauna.
Oh, yeah.
25 minutes at 135 degrees.
Do we have that sponsor in place yet or not?
We do not. No. Oh, okay. We're sponsored by Cypress. No, we're sponsored by Cedar. Just Cedar Wood.
Cedarwood.
And maybe we're working on an Axe body spray, you know. So those two, and also I've been using a magnesium based recovery lotion that I use. Oh, yeah. That I use before I play hockey, after I play hockey, and before I go to bed.
And
called Winter Green.
Not a bunch of malarkey?
Not a bunch of malarkey, no. And you know, I would be the first to tell you I was skeptical to begin with.
Yep.
But if you think about it, like Jill takes magnesium for her restless leg syndrome, mm-hmm. but a topical application of magnesium versus a general oral ingestion of it seems logical, as long as it can be absorbed and utilized. And so I found more success with the lotion than I have with like the bath salt. Even okay. though I do like, it's like, hey, you're taking a hot bath. Hey, I'll do that. What the hell, right? That's good times. But I do think I do like the lotion that they have. Hmm. And there's a little bit of spray that I'll put on sometimes before hockey.
Do we have a coupon code for the listener?
No, I don't have any. Oh. So, but it's a good product. I like it. I mean, I once again, they're giving us nothing.
Golly.
They're giving us nothing for that. I know we leave so much on the table, Devin. I think I'm still waiting for although, you know, we might just consider the MSP Moves, sponsorship, maybe just engaging because of, you know, Julian used your water bottle at hockey the other day.
There you go.
And I did have some chocolates with an I love you.
You sure did, didn't you?
Left on my Valentine. Doorstep. Oh yeah, those are so good. I just ate those up. There's a lot of things that come our way.
Yeah.
So for that, I appreciate you.
You're very welcome.
And so I'll let you plug your own crap all the time.
Well, okay. My time here, let's consider my time here. That's very valuable, allegedly.
I don't know if we're going to go very. I'd say valuable.
MSP Moves is donating that time to this podcast. That's a sponsorship. That's a form of sponsorship.
That is a form of sponsorship. We're right on that.
That's a form of sponsorship.
You know, what else are you going to be doing? Not going to be selling commercial real estate or anything like that.
Speaking
I saw you're selling a bike store.
Listener, if you want a perfect retail space, recently updated, all kinds of storage downstairs in downtown Watertown, Minnesota.
Where's Watertown?
Far west.
How far west?
So if you ride by Gear West and keep going on Highway 6, you'll get to Watertown.
So I'll pass Delano?
It's Delano adjacent. It's south of Delano.
So it's south Delano? Because it's like Delano, like suburb?
Okay, it's Watertown. Okay, it's its own town. Okay,
I heard the name the first time.
It's its own town, sir.
Okay, I don't see how the name. I was gonna say, it's Watertown. How does that tell me where it is? Is it adjacent to a body of water? Because there's a lot of that in the state of Minnesota.
Do you want a retail space in a town that's exploding with new development? Over 600 new housing units coming on in the next 5 years.
600?
That's where you want. You got to look to the future.
I'm telling you.
Let's open. Currently,
are you moving out there? Is you gonna put a little lake house cabin out there?
A little
summer venue?
So I'll just buy the bike shop for myself. So it's not the bike. It's the building is for sale. If you wanted to buy the bike shop, that's certainly for sale if someone wanted that as well. But it's just the building. So it's where Carver County Cycles currently is. My client is offloading the building.
Why are they getting out of the bike business?
One of the most important things in real estate is not disclosing the why of what your clients are doing. That's not your business.
You don't want to get real sued.
It is 100% not your business, sir.
So if I were to make an offer in the building, could I inquire about that if I signed like an NDA?
No, I'm never going to.
No, not at all?
Why would I disclose my client's motivation to you?
I want to know. Hey, if you're selling a house and it's because there was a mass murder, you have to have a disclosure on that, right?
Correct. A disclosure. If there's certain pertinent material facts, like someone mass murdered a bunch of people in the
house. So they weren't like, so there's not a bunch of chemicals buried in the basement or anything. So we're safe with that.
Yep.
It's free of argon.
Argon? Actually, he has some argon 18s.
Hey, there you go. Those are actually, would they give you a sweet deal on a bike if you bought the building too?
Ooh, that could probably be negotiated in, huh?
Yeah, like rope a free bike into there or discounted wheels.
It's real estate. Everything's a negotiation.
All right, I love it. All right, Carver.
Carver County Cycles. It's in Watertown. Really, it's a nice building.
It looked nice.
Right,
I saw the pictures.
Watertown, yeah.
It was interesting for me because knowing that like what you do, that it had to have been somebody you knew. Because that's not inside your normal wheelhouse of what you sell.
No. Residential is absolutely my focus. Because it's a client, we've done multiple deals. I helped them buy the building a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
That's it. Otherwise, I would not have. I'm not chasing down suburban commercial listings.
Yeah, good for you.
Yep. Suburban residential. I have one coming on in Maple Grove, one coming on in Coon Rapids soon.
You got all kinds of
All kinds of opportunity coming up for buyers in the real estate market.
There's so many opportunities.
Oh,
they're just raining out of the sky. Mm-hmm. Raining out of the sky. Well, that's a lot of fun. Devin, I can't think of anything else to talk about today. You got anything else you want to talk about?
Should folks be getting in shape for the season, Chris? Is that something you'd recommend as a professional coach?
Maybe.
Yep. Probably time.
It is. I mean, yeah, if you haven't started training, you know, you have to. And that, I would say, even for depending on wherever you're racing, you have to start moving. And if you're in the Midwest, the weather is nice enough, you should be outside.
Yeah.
The warm weather should be enough to motivate you to get out, even if it's just that you've been trapped inside all winter long. And we haven't had really any winter to speak of. But yeah, I mean, now it's time to, I mean, you know, I'm not saying like you're trying to get out and get that beach body going, but if you do have races coming up, you have to start to think about that. Also have to start to think about like what races you're going to do and registering for those races too, because, you know, races only exist if you register for them, and we've lost a fair number of them around. So I think it's important that if you plan to do a race, you don't wait till the week before.
Yeah.
You register for them early so that they can plan and they can.
It's a different dynamic now.
100% it is.
Because the core Minnesota races always sold out 20 years ago.
A year in advance. Like they were the first. I remember the first of the year, you had to sign up for everything. But we've lost so many good ones.
Yeah.
You know, we're lucky to have like a handful of them around still. I think it's if you don't support them. I saw Buffalo is not happening this year.
Really?
Yeah, Buffalo's not.
That's
happening.
That's been such a strong staple.
Mm-hmm. Buffalo's not happening this year.
Wow.
So that's a big one. We haven't had Heart of the Lakes for quite a while.
Yep.
I haven't heard anything about what's going to be happening over at the with Gear West. I haven't heard anything about their half or their race that they've been doing. I did talk with the guy that was. Look that they were consulting with to do the race, to direct a race.
Yep.
But I haven't heard of or seen anything about it being promoted.
Maple Grove is still late August?
Maple Grove still late August. Yep. That's the state championship. They got the
Got that designation.
Yep.
Nice.
State championship again and the state high school championship. So if you're looking to go to nationals, it's this is where you want to go to.
Yeah.
That's still a good race. It's still a very solid race. It's probably the best race in the state right now. The YWCA has come back. That's going to be a good one.
Were they close to sellout last year?
They were. And that's a big race. You know, it's a women's only race. When that's so, it has a different market, different cater. They have a different group that they cater to. It's essential that those races still remain. But your early season duathlons. I think Apple's still around up in Sartell. You know, some of those clutch things. Maplewood Triathlon, was that it? The one that was out by Maplewood. I can't remember the early season duathlons.
Oakdale Duathlon.
Oakdale, that's what it is. Oakdale. Yeah, I don't know if those are still going on. A lot of those were Randy's races.
Yeah,
you know, Randy Fulton was a big proponent. You don't have these big kind of juggernaut race directors anymore.
We need the local events. You got to have the fun. They're the entry point. They're the tune-up for if you're prepping for your Ironman, you want to have some fun local tune-ups.
Yeah, you got to get your race legs on.
It's been interesting, I'll tell you. I'm mostly doing gravel rides for kind of my, I would hesitate to call it racing these days, but that's what I'm participating
in. Your participation?
In. Yeah. And it borders because I give it a good effort. I treat it like an event still, but am I racing it the way I used to? Certainly not. Gravel, I did my first gravel race in 2014. So we're over 10 years into the gravel trend. It's exploded.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching it follow an arc of triathlon where it used to be there were just a few core key events that everyone did. Then as the opportunity is there, more people are putting on different events all around. So now we're at the phase where it's a little more diffused. So you aren't necessarily selling out in the snap of a finger as soon as you put your event live.
Yeah.
And we have all the race dynamics are shifting as there are more serious people. More of the events are getting a little more professional with branding. And the spirit of gravel used to just be like, you go and you just ride hard. And, you know, it's no entry fee and you send in a postcard. And, you know, of course, so as the sport has matured, some of the OG people are like grumbling like, oh, that's not the spirit of gravel. It's like, what? It's following an arc. This is the evolution of things. This is how it always goes. It's getting a little more professional. So some people griping about price tags for events.
That's what happens to anything.
Yep.
you know, whether it's, you know, gravel racing, triathlon, I mean, music even.
Yeah.
Think about when bands first come out, people are like, oh yeah, they're gravelly. I like them. They're just, you know, they're like early Metallica. And people like, you know, oh, that's great. You know, Ride the Lightning came out, you know, Kill 'Em All. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, oh, like the Black Album or Injustice for All. And then they, it's like, oh, I don't really, they're kind of, you know, selling out. And then the concert tickets become super, you know, expensive. And there's a certain group of people that will always want to be like in the beginnings.
Yep.
And they'll never be happy if they don't, you know, don't stay in those kind of like gravelly urban beginnings. But I think sport has to mature and events have to mature.
Yeah.
And it is the normal life cycle. You know, eventually somebody is going to say, how am I going to monetize this? A Lifetime is going to jump in and go, I want to buy 7 or 8 of those.
And look what Lifetime has done this year. Or even from a professionalism standpoint, as more and more people are participating, there's more and more risk on that road. You know, protecting yourself as an event promoter and making arrangements, you know, for when the inevitable unfortunate things happen when people cross paths on the road.
Yeah, I mean,
being prepared for the worst.
I mean, Dirty Kanza comparative to Unbound now, which are the exact same races.
Yep.
You know, they were the exact same races. Unbound is what Lifetime calls it now instead of Dirty Kanza. You know, if you thought about like how it was an independent event, I mean, there was no support. You'd start and they would have a chaise lounge somewhere out in the middle of the nowhere that you can get your picture taken by.
Yep. 200 miles later, you finish.
And then you finish. Now Unbound is like a whole thing. I mean, it is a big production. And I think that is the evolution of it. It needs to get into its own. It needs to kind of feel special. But you're never going to satisfy everybody.
Nope.
There's always going to be somebody that's going to go, it was better before. And then there's going to be somebody that's going to go, this is way better now because now everybody can do it. And it's making it more accessible. And you're growing the sport. And the industry starts to grow with gravel bikes and gravel accessories and stores that sell things. And so
gravel bikes and gravel accessories have been booming. I think gravel is what the industry wanted fat biking to be.
I think so too.
I think fat biking plateaued and fell to pieces pretty badly.
It has run its route.
Yep.
It again, like everything, it used to be you had to, like, if you had a fat bike, you had to make it.
Yeah.
And then Surly came out with a Pugsley that you could buy that was all put together. Remember, Jill bought me that for Christmas 1 year. The first.
Do you still
Pugsley,
have that?
No, I sold it when I bought my Otso.
Okay.
But that was like, you know, a big steel bike that was all put together. And then you had all the Salsas and the you know, the Otsos and everything that kind of came along with that. And then they had a metamorphosis into, you know, other things. And I think gravel bikes are definitely the kind of the new fad of bikes. And there'll be something new at some point in time, be unicycles or who knows what. I mean, who knows what it's going to be.
Yeah.
But gravel bikes are definitely the hip bike to have right now. Just kind of like how mountain bikes were at one point in time. You know, they kind of ebb and flow.
I think mountain is thriving right now, I believe.
Oh, for sure it is. Yeah. I mean, especially in Minnesota with all the mountain bike parks that we have. If you think about even just up north of like the three biggies, you think about like, you know, so it's Cuyuna, Tioga, and Redhead are probably the three biggest mountain bike, you know, parks that we have, which are, you know, legitimate parks. And people are traveling to those places. You have industries being built up around those.
Well, and look at how you can participate so much more as a family with so many kids doing it in high school now.
Oh yeah. Great high school sport. Julian does it now and he loves it. And he's like, you know, he's just out there. He thought when a kid broke his chain and he and Julian got to pass him and he wasn't the last person to come in and he said, hey, I won. Okay. You know what? Good on you, buddy. You can buy ice cream at the food truck now. I love it. I mean, you see the smiles on the kids' faces. It's when a kid who is a quote unquote participant and not a superstar will come home and tell you they had fun at it. That's a win right there. That's a full on win.
Huge.
You know, when a kid like has to be the superstar in order for it to be enjoyable.
Mm.
No, we have the right people doing it. The 612 program is one of them. You know, they're a great organization. They bring a lot of kids in. They teach them how to ride. They make sure that they all feel supported and they develop. And Julian loves it. I mean, he like, and if my little 13-year-old loves doing it, it's got to be fun. So, all right, Devin, sorry I was late today.
Apology. Hey, on my birthday week, but you know what? I'm feeling gracious.
I wanted you to go out and get yourself something nice. That's
You're
really
forgiven.
What I wanted you to do. Aw, thank
You're
you.
You're forgiven.
Thank you. That comes so genuine from my stepson. So, all right. Well, on that note, we thank you all for listening to another episode this week. We hope your day is great. We hope you enjoy the warm weather and get out and train and get outside and just have fun outside. And while you're outside, just remember that all we ask from you is that you be a little better.